Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Welcome to UC San Diego. Welcome to the Price Center at UC San Diego. Welcome to the 2011 UC Counselors Conference. My name is Alan Houston. I'm a professor of political science. I'm also provost of Eleanor Roosevelt College here at UC San Diego. And it's my job to welcome you, to introduce you briefly to the university, and then to our keynote speaker today. The University of California is a federal system. Like the nation in which we live, it's got a national government presided over by a president, but it also has distinct states. We call them campuses. There are 9 different campuses in the system. Each one of them is unique, and that's both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because it means each unique campus has something special to offer undergraduates, but it's a curse because it means each one is different and requires special local knowledge to understand what its resources, what its opportunities, how it can serve individual students. Take UC San Diego. In my title alone, my professional title here, is contained information about what makes it unique for undergraduates, but it's also rather peculiar. Provost Eleanor Roosevelt College. No other campus has colleges like ours. No other campus has provosts like ours. No other campus has an Eleanor Roosevelt that serves as a model for undergraduates. So I thought I'd take a moment to explain my title to give you a sense of what makes this a particularly unique campus. I'll leave it to the other campuses to share some of their unique qualities with you. UC San Diego has 6 colleges. Each of those colleges has a theme. Those colleges serve as residential centers. They serve as home base for academic advising. They serve as resources for students in their programming activities. They each have a core curriculum connected with it. There's Eleanor Roosevelt College, Muir College, Six College, yet to be named, Thurgood Marshall College. Each of the colleges that resides in a different quadrant of the university. It's a different physical space, but it's also a different institution. And in those institutions, there is a character or a theme. It's like a local neighborhood or a city. You might travel to Los Angeles and say, it's got a character. And you go to Northern California and you realize that San Francisco or San Jose each have their own character and they're distinct. Each of the colleges at UC San Diego has a distinct theme or character. In our case, it's explicitly dedicated to international citizenship. Eleanor Roosevelt is the namesake for the college because she embodied the ideas of global citizenship. John Muir is the namesake for John Muir College because he embodied the ideal of environmental care and concern. Earl Warren is the namesake for Warren College because he embodied the ideas of public service and law and society. So each of these neighborhoods around the campus has its own advisors, it has its own core curriculum, it has its own student government, it has its own activities and organizations, and it draws from students in every major and every background, every passion, every possibility. What we've tried to do at UC San Diego is to take a large research university and combine it with some of the strengths of a small liberal arts college. You have a student body of 23,000 undergraduates. But that's a very large space and number for individual students to navigate. We've broken them into units, call them colleges, call them small local governments, in which students are located, in which they have activities and opportunities and resources that are closer to them, that reach out to them individually. So each college has about 36 to 3,800 students in it. Every major, every concentration, every background, every passion. But within those colleges, they all pursue a common core curriculum. Again, our core curriculum, it's called Making of the Modern World in Eleanor Roosevelt College. Our core curriculum is designed to introduce students to the history and culture and development of the modern world, not just from a Western point of view, but from a non-Western points of view, so that they can understand the development of the Indian subcontinent or understand the development of China as a major world power, but not just recently, over the 2 or 3 millennia of human history. So each college has a theme, each college has a purpose, but each college also brings together students in a small neighborhood. And our experience is that that smaller connected neighborhood provides an opportunity for students to thrive that's not available in a single large research university. So you have small neighborhoods for undergraduates and then departments that sit in the research university and provide the depth and breadth of scholarly activity. So that I'm in a department of political science that reaches across the university, that serves students at the highest level, and has undergraduates from every single college, but I'm also the provost of Eleanor Roosevelt College. A provost, what is that? A provost is an academic officer and also an administrative officer. It's an unusual use of that title. It has to do with the local history of UC San Diego, but it's a professor. Each college has a professor in charge who oversees the core curriculum, who works with the staff to ensure that advising needs are met, general advising needs for every student, who ensures that the student services that are available to students are as rich and vibrant as possible. So we have each campus within the system has its own character, and what distinguishes this campus is this college system. It's sometimes confusing. People wonder, do I have to fit in a particular major or interest to go to that particular college? No. Every college contains every kind of student, and yet we find that the experience, the bonding experience in the smaller community makes a more vibrant and rich experience. Let me try a different metaphor. It's like baseball. Each of us has a favorite team. Well, those of us who pay attention to baseball have a favorite team. Each team plays the same game. Each team has the same rules. Each team provides the same opportunities to fans and players alike, but they've each got a slightly different character. I went to graduate school in Boston, so I know what the Red Sox are like. I know people who grew up in New York, and they're devoted Mets fans, and they are also sometimes devoted Yankees fans. And each is slightly different, and yet each serves the general population. So we have these local communities that reach out to individual students. So that's part of what makes UC San Diego unique. But again, it's a part of this grand system, the University of California, perhaps the greatest achievement of modern public education in the United States. When I was a simple professor, a mere flat-footed professor, I had no idea how students got here. They were like mushrooms. They would just pop up in my classroom. And when I left the room, they disappeared. I had no idea what was going on. One of the exciting things of working as an administrator is finding out just how rich and complicated the process is, identifying and nurturing students as they develop their interest in going to college, helping them write their essays, help evaluate those essays and applications. It's a collective process. Reaching out to students whose background and experiences may have made it less likely that they would attend university and making it possible for them to become parts of our community. Then ensuring that once here that they're retained, that they are adequately served, that they're satisfied and enriched by their experiences. These are all incredibly complicated tasks. So complicated that it can't be accomplished by a single institution, by a single individual, by a single set of people. It is a collective, a collaborative effort. It is very much a cooperative relationship between the University of California and, in particular, you, the counselors who work directly with the students who are seeking to think about or seeking to attend an institution of higher education. I have a personal experience of this. My son is now in 12th grade. And so he's going through this, and so in addition to my experience as administrator, I am now getting the personal experience. My daughter, who's already in college, traveled her own path and went to community college and never really accessed the resources, but my son is completely captivated and dependent on the opportunities and the resources and the meetings and the sessions and the advice, and it's really just extraordinary, and I'm ever more conscious of how important your contributions are. It's collaborative, and for that reason, I'm grateful that you're here, and I hope that you can gain as much information about the University of California as a system as possible in today's activities. I hope that you can learn a little bit more about our campus and some of the unique strengths that it offers to undergraduates, but also about the system as a whole, and I thank you for coming here. So our keynote speaker for today is Dr. Judy Sakaki, who's the Vice President for Student Affairs in the Office of the President of the University of California. Dr. Sakaki is in charge of or oversees all of the policies and services and the initiatives that help to gain access for students, to ensure their affordability of the University of California, their success at the University of California. There are over 230,000 students, undergraduate and graduate, within the University of California system right now, and it is her task to oversee the entry and success of every one of those individuals. Yes, it is a collaborative effort. And we need you just like you need us to make that succeed. Vice President Sakaki has dedicated her life, in particular her professional career, to the inclusion of individuals who were previously not finding easy access to the system. Educational opportunity and achievement for all students are primary goals in her professional career. She is also a product of the public education system in California. She grew up in Oakland, attended Oakland Public Schools, went to Cal State Hayward for a BA and a MA degrees, and UC Berkeley for her PhD. And she has continued to support the public education system of California by sending her children to it. So all three of her sons have received degrees from University of California campuses. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Judy Sakaki.
Good morning, and welcome to the 2011 UC Counselor Conferences. I'm so excited to be here on campus. I think the last time I was here, we had a regents meeting here on campus. I am a first-generation college student. I stand here before you today because a counselor reached out to me and opened my eyes to the possibilities of attending college. She cared enough to encourage me, to show me what I needed to take to be prepared, and then she helped me with the application process. Were it not for her, I would not be standing here today addressing you as a vice president for this system. Because of that, and the fact that I interned as a high school counselor early in my career, I really have an understanding of the importance of the work that you do, how challenging it can sometimes be, and how rewarding it can also be. I also know that when you're most successful, oftentimes students don't come back to you and say, gee, thank you so much. I've now gotten into this particular campus, and I'm at fault for that myself, on behalf of myself for not going back and thanking my high school counselor, on behalf of all the students that you send to the UC and to other universities in the state and across the country. I want to say thank you. Thank you for opening doors to your students and for quite literally changing their life. This morning, I'm going to cover four things. First, I'm going to provide an update on the state budget and the impact on the University of California. Second, I'd like to talk about the outcomes of our last fall admissions cycle. Then I will be speaking about our new, important changes in our admissions process for next year, the next cycle. And I'll close with information about financing a UC education. So I see some of you note takers out there, and I do want to share that the PowerPoint information, as with all of the presentations that you will see today, are on the web, and so you can easily access them. I was reminded of a quote. I see so many of you taking copious notes, and that means you're great students. But remember this Native American quote, "Tell me and I'll forget. Show me and I may remember. Involve me and I'll understand." So if you're taking notes, means you're involved, and carry on. So let me begin with a few words about the state budget and the impact on the University of California. So you've probably read in the paper, heard on the news, about the large budget cuts in the UC system. We had a $650 million cut this year alone as a result of the decline in state funding. And this has really provided an unprecedented challenge for the University of California. But we're doing our very, very best to protect the academic experience of our UC students. President Udoff and the entire UC system remains very committed to maintaining quality, being excellent, And access and affordability are very, very high, and we maintain those. So as a result, we are not cutting back on the number of new California freshmen that we will be admitting this coming year. We expect to enroll about the same number of freshmen this fall that we did last year. We're also very proud to say that students are able to get the classes that they need to graduate within 4 years. In fact, many of our students are having a shortened time to degree because of AP courses they may have taken before they arrive on campus, or because they're taking a heavier, fuller loads when they arrive on our campus. And importantly, our campuses still continue to offer the full range of experiences that have really been the hallmark of a UC education. They have the opportunity to learn from top-notch faculty, to participate in undergraduate research experiences, to engage in study abroad and other extracurricular activities. We have a UCDC center as well. And then they have access to excellent student services that will support them so that they can be successful. Now, don't get me wrong, $650 million is real money, and so there are some things that we've had to change in the university a bit. We've been creative. We tried to be creative about that and really minimize the impact on students. For example, we've had to reduce staffing in some areas. We've had cuts where we've in staffing that have affected in some ways the way we deliver services. So there might be shortened hours on some of our offices. And we're looking to technological solutions for those so that there's more information available on the web. Students and their families may send an email in cases they have a quick question, and that staff might not be available to them at the hour that they might want. The university has also done what we call created efficiencies. So across the system, we have done things to save thousands of dollars. And so those kinds of things have helped us to minimize the impact. In addition, unfortunately, one of the things that we've had to do is to increase the fees to mitigate the reduction in state funding. Our latest increase was 9.6% in system-wide tuition and fees. And approximately a quarter of the cuts since 2010-11 have been offset by higher tuition. And we really hate to do this. And unfortunately, we don't see any real change on the horizon that I can stand here and say to you that won't continue to be the case. However, I do want to remind you, as I've gone through the audience a little bit this morning, that what's very important is that we will continue to have excellent and robust student financial aid programs. And I'll talk a little bit more in detail about some of those in just a few minutes. In addition, this year, for the very first time since 2006, we found that we need to increase the application fee. And that will increase by $10 per campus in order to fund our admissions process. This will begin with this upcoming cycle. Now, keep in mind that our very robust fee waiver program is still in place, and students will be allowed to apply to at least four campuses. Four campuses. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about our non-resident enrollment. Some of you have been reading articles in the paper, and I know there's been a little buzz about that, so I'd like to just address that. The university had a Commission of the Future this past year that really studied looking forward for the University of California, what kinds of things will we need to look at to maintain the quality, access, and affordability that we so care about. And one of the recommendations is that long-term, we could grow our non-resident enrollment up to 10% of our across the system of our student population. We're doing this for a number of reasons. First off, out-of-state and international students bring with them a unique perspectives and a geographical diversity that really adds to the classroom discussion for all of our students. In addition, they also pay non-resident fees, and that provides revenue for the university to fund the education of all of our students. So let me give you a little example of how this works. So for example, at UC Berkeley, where Chancellor Bergeron used the extra revenue from the non-resident enrollment that they had to add more than 1,700 seats to core classes that were impacted, and he could add those extra sections, and that benefits both non-resident, as well as resident students alike. So I'd like to emphasize that our enrollment of non-resident students is not and will not be at the expense of California residents. Our campuses will continue to enroll California students up to the level funded by the state. Then non-resident students are admitted and enrolled after that. UC has a state funding problem, not a capacity problem. At this point, I'd like to turn our attention to some of the details of our last admission cycle. And it's a very, very positive story here. I think one of the things that always maybe surprises me still is that our campuses receive such large, large numbers of applications. UCLA, for example, receives more admissions applications than any university in the entire country. That's 81,000 applications this year. And some of our other campuses are not very far behind. San Diego here received over 70,000 applications, and Berkeley nearly 69,000 applications. So for the students that you serve, the California high school students, the number of applications grew by 3.6% across the system last year, demonstrating, of course, that there's continued interest in a demand for UC education. Most of your students applied to, on average, 4 campuses. System-wide, 61,345 California residents were offered admission to a campus in our system. Most campuses, again, receive far more applications than they could admit. In fact, 6 of our campuses were forced to turn away 40% of their applicants. Nevertheless, we continue to offer a place for all UC-eligible students through our referral process. All eligible students who were not admitted to a campus that they had applied to were given the opportunity to be offered admission at our newest campus, UC Merced. When all is said and done, we expect the enrollment of new California freshmen for next fall to be the same as it was this past year. Now let me talk a little bit about the academic profile. So who are these students? What do they look like that are enrolling at our campus? Our freshman profile, academic profile, continues to be very strong. On average, new students will be coming to us with over 24 year-long college prep courses, an average GPA of 3.86, and a very high average standardized test scores. I know there are a couple of our chancellors themselves that have said to me, gee, if I applied to my own campus, I might not get in at this point. But understandably, some students may find these average grades and test scores a little bit intimidating, and that's where you come in. Were it not for all of you encouraging students, some of those students who really can be very successful at the university might be discouraged. So we encourage you to continue to encourage your students to apply broadly and apply to many campuses that they are interested in. So let me move from the academic profile to the other outcome measures. And I want to say a few words about the diversity of our incoming class. No public university can call itself excellent if it is not reaching all segments of society. And one measure we often look at is the enrollment of students from groups that have historically been underserved and underrepresented by UC. And these groups are African American, American Indian, and Chicano Latino students. As the California high school population has grown more diverse, so have UC's admitted and enrolling classes. For the first time this fall, we expect more than 30% of newly enrolling students to be from these groups. And in addition, over 45% of our newly enrolling students are the first in their families to attend college. And over 40% of the incoming class come from low-income families. Now, another type of diversity that we have is achieved through our transfer admissions process. And transfer continues to be a very important path for access to a UC education and a path that we are continuing to streamline. Our transfer students do quite well after they come to us. They persist and they graduate at the same rate as students who enter UC as freshmen. So students, your students, some of them, should view attending a California community college and transferring to UC as a viable option. Under the master plan, UC gives very strong preference to junior level transfer students from the community colleges. Nearly 90% of our admitted transfer students come to us from one of the 112 campuses. Now, the number of applicants to UC from the California Community Colleges has been growing in recent years and increased by 9.6% for this fall. As with freshmen, we expect to enroll almost the same number of California Community College transfers students this fall as we did last fall. And if you're interested in learning more about our transfer initiatives, I encourage you to attend one of the sessions entitled The Transfer Path. Now let's turn our attention from this last fall to next fall and to UC's new freshman admissions policy. This policy will affect students who apply to UC in this coming cycle. The goal of the University of California is to enroll on each of its 9 undergraduate campuses a student body that demonstrates high academic achievement and exceptional personal talent. As a public university, it is also important that our student body encompasses the broad diversity of backgrounds so characteristic of California in terms of culture, race, geography, and socioeconomic background. Our new admissions policy has been designed by the faculty to refine the way that UC achieves these goals by opening the doors to consideration for UC admission to all students who have completed and done well in a reasonable course of preparation for college. So under this new policy, applicants who have completed at least 11 of the 15 required A through G courses and who have at least a 3.0 GPA will receive a comprehensive review of their application. Applicants will still have to take either the ACT with writing or the SAT reasoning, but they will not have to meet any minimum score to be considered. And importantly, this year, for the very first time, students will not need to be required to complete any SAT subject examinations. Now, comprehensive review is the process by which we have made our admissions decisions since 2002, so it's not brand new. The UC Comprehensive Review Policy looks at 14 academic and personal factors, and these are noted on our website. Campuses place the highest emphasis on academic achievement. But most importantly, achievements are viewed in context. And it is through this process that we are able to find the diamonds in the rough, so to speak. The students who will excel at the university, who will bring special talents and abilities, and who might not have been offered admission based solely on traditional measures of achievement. So let me give you a few examples. Carolina is a student who comes from a high school that offers only 3 AP courses. Let's say that she completes 2 of the 3 courses available to her and she earns a 3.4 GPA. Now, her application would be viewed differently than a student with a 3.4 GPA who goes to a school that offers 15 AP courses and completes only 2 of the 15 there. We're looking for students who take advantage of the opportunities that are available to them. Another example is Simon, who comes from a single parent family. He works part-time and uses his earnings to help support his family. Simon picks up his siblings after school, makes dinner for his family, and then begins his homework. He's active on his campus as well. He has 5 solid academic courses, including 1 AP and 2 UC-approved honors courses. Maybe his grades aren't straight A's, but Simon is overcoming obstacles and challenging himself taking advantage of what's available to him in a way. He displays leadership within his family, and he shows the kind of drive that we believe can lead to success at UC. Now, the university will continue to use our referral process to ensure that California residents who are in the top 9% of students statewide or in the top 9% in the local context will be offered a space at the university, although not necessarily at the campus of their choice. The local context refers to the newly expanded ELC, or eligibility in the local context. So let me say a few words about ELC. As you know, students can qualify for admission to UC by being superstars in the context of their own high school. This month, we will begin recognizing the academic achievements of the students at high schools that you have told us are near the top of their graduating class. The letters, which your students should be receiving very soon, will also urge them to apply for admission this November. We have expanded the ELC path from 4% to 9% of the graduating class in each participating high school. But we need your help in encouraging these students to actually apply to the university. And then 4 to 6 weeks after they apply, qualified students will see their ELC status noted on their My Application website. So the question, fundamentally, many have come up and said to me, so what's different and what do I need to do to tell my students? So you should tell your students to prepare for the university the same way that you do now, to be well-rounded students, to challenge themselves and take the most rigorous courses available to them and to do as well as they can. They should participate in extracurricular activities and show leadership. The university looks for examples of leadership in the school, in the community, and at home. We also look for special skills or talents that students have developed. So as I mentioned earlier, we've eliminated the SAT subject exams as a requirement, although students will not be precluded from taking the tests if they want and submitting the scores. If they score well on the exams, it will be additive. If they don't take the tests or they don't do so well, they will not be penalized. Now, keep in mind there are still some majors on some campuses that recommend particular subject exams, and those recommendations are listed on the website. Essentially, the better prepared students are, the more likely they will be admitted to the campus of their choice, and we always encourage them to apply broadly. I'm going to step away from my prepared comments for just a moment, and as I've talked to some of you in the room this morning, I hear some worry, and I know as a parent myself, there's worry about, and on the part of counselors, about excellent students getting into the best campus, the best campus. And best is all relative. It really is. Your students will get an excellent education irrespective of which university campus they attend. It's mostly about the fit. And that's why it's so important for students and their families to visit campuses, to get a feel, to find out what is unique, what you've learned about, what's unique about UC San Diego and other campuses in our system. There are a couple interesting facts. So I want to give a personal example from my own family. So I know the stress, and I know as counselors and as parents, we all get very stressed because our students get stressed. And sometimes we create the stress. So my oldest son, when he was applying to the university, he decided to apply to all of the UCs. And as a parent, and I didn't work for UC then, I worked in the California State University system, I said to him, you know, so he wouldn't be too disappointed, I said, you know, a lot of really excellent students with your kind of background won't get accepted to the campuses they apply, so you should just expect that. He still applied, and much to my surprise, he got accepted to all the UCs that he applied to. He then visited campuses. We visited campuses. He talked to people. He read about the majors. And then he selected, much to his peers' surprise, he decided to go to Riverside. So this means he was accepted to San Diego and Berkeley and UCLA and every other UC that he had applied to, and he selected Riverside. And many of his friends who lived in Fresno at the time were so surprised, and they couldn't figure out why he would do that. Now, there were nine of his friends. They all wanted to be medical doctors. And they all went off to different universities, very prestigious private schools and public schools, the best in the country. And to this day, I will say that my son of his nine friends is the only one that is a medical doctor. He went to UC Riverside, and then he was accepted at UCLA Medical School, and he's a practicing physician in Southern California now. So I want to say, it doesn't matter which campus, really, that you go to. My younger son applied broadly, too, just like his older brother, and he selected Davis as his campus. And he does not regret it. Many of his friends went to other campuses and private schools, and he loved his experience. So what is the message here? The take-home message is try to get parents and students to relax a little bit. It's going to be okay. They're going to get, I know it's very easy, it's easier said than done, but they will get an excellent, excellent education irrespective of which campus they go to. And the very interesting fact that you can share with them is that we survey students on all of our campuses. We give them something called UQs. We ask them a series of questions, and one of the very important questions is about their satisfaction with their campus. If you could choose this campus again, would you? And keep in mind that a majority of our students do not get into their, quote, first choice campus, if there is such a thing as a first choice, the campus that they're really hoping they get into. And what we find is an extremely high student satisfaction rate across the system. 88%, almost 90% of the students say, if I could choose again, I would pick this campus. They get there, they love it, they have a great time, and they excel, and they go on. And 70% of our students across the system, irrespective of the campus, go on to graduate or professional school. So they will get a great education. So the take-home message is fit and help parents and yourself to relax a little bit. Okay. So in addition to questions about admissions, many of your students will ask whether or not they can afford a UC education when they read those headlines. And what we want to tell you is that we are at UC are maintaining a very strong financial aid program, including what we are calling the Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan. These programs have kept UC financially accessible to students from every income level. And tuition and fees for this year will average $13,150 for California students. And when we add in living expenses, books, supplies, and health insurance, the total comes to $31,173. However, the university has a number of strategies to help families manage these costs, and the majority of families do not pay this full amount. Through the university's Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan, students from families with annual incomes of $80,000 or less and who can demonstrate financial need will be assured that their system-wide tuition and fees are covered by grants and scholarships. And in addition, we have an initiative for middle-income families as well that go up to families that make up to $120,000. In addition, some students will qualify for additional grant assistance to offset other educational costs beyond their tuition and fees. Our UC financial aid programs have worked well. We enroll more low-income students than any other research university in the country. We're very proud of this. Nearly 40% of all undergraduate students at UC receive federal Pell grants, and over half of our students receive some form of grant or scholarship assistance. And I do want to mention that if you haven't played around with financial aid calculators, each of our campuses on their website has a financial aid calculator. Oh, as I mentioned earlier, we're moving more and more resources to the web. By having everything online, we can make sure you always have the most up-to-date and current information. And based on feedback from counselors that we had in focus groups last year, we're in the process of moving all of our material from the Quick Reference for Counselors booklet to the web. The site will have a bookmarking tool so you can easily organize and access the information that is important to you. The University of California will continue to be a good investment for your students and their families. We will continue to keep the doors open to your students, to work to keep the university affordable, and most of all, to maintain the world-class quality of our undergraduate education. We really appreciate your help in sharing this information with your students and their families. You know, in closing, I really wish that you could be there. We'll be greeting students on most of our campuses. Two of our campuses have already started. They're on the semester system. Others are just greeting our new students. And, you know, the excitement at freshman move-in and orientation is just incredible. You can just feel the excitement. You can see the looks on their faces. Some are a little nervous at first when they first arrive on our campuses. And they always bring way too much stuff to fit in their little dorm room. But their whole world just opens up. It opens up and expands almost overnight. Their exposure to new knowledge, new people, new places, new ways of being, all happens at a university, at UC. Your students grow and change in ways that are really unimaginable to them. And I wish that you could then see your students at commencement, graduating 4 years later with a coveted UC degree. Their sense of accomplishment, the proud looks on their faces of their parents, family members, and friends really puts a lump in your throat. I know when I go to commencement and the music starts playing, you get goosebumps. You get that at high school. It just increases in terms of the volume. But what an amazing journey. What a wonderful pathway, a door that you open for your students. There is no more important job than the one that you have to educate and steer our young people. So I want to thank you for what you do, how you do it, and for taking the time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. And now I'd like to introduce the panelists that I have who've joined me here on the stage. First off, Assistant Vice Chancellor Walter Robinson, who's from the UC Davis campus, formerly from Berkeley. And Coordinator for Admissions and Evaluation, Avira Spears, who also is from the Berkeley campus, now works with me at the Office of the President in Oakland. And we have our moderator here from the San Diego campus, Shirley Balban Stacher, who is the Associate Director here at UC San Diego. So we would be happy to take your questions at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Sakaki. What I'd like you, we are opening up to questions. We do have a few minutes. Unfortunately, we will not be able to take a lot of questions, but we'd like the questions that you ask to be of a system-wide nature, because you do have representatives from each campus who are staffing tables, and you'll also have the opportunity to hear representatives from each campus up here. So, questions, please. Yes. I believe the question is, which campuses will be guaranteeing admission to ELC students?
Yes. Since we went from 4% to 9%, we anticipate that the numbers will probably be greater than what they've been in the past. UC Merced has agreed to take all eligible ELCs who apply to UC Merced. For the rest of the campuses, we will look at ELC status as value added in the comprehensive and holistic review process.
Yes.
Okay, I'll stand my tiptoes. I understand the reason for admitting out-of-state students to help balance the budget, but I wanted to hear firsthand, because I'm hearing a lot of rumors, what the percentage of those out-of-state students that are receiving merit aid.
That is a great question that I have no idea. I know that some campuses have, most campuses have not. So I really don't know the answer to that question, but I believe that's something that we could find out if, and there's a workshop on that, sure. There's a workshop on, probably go to the financial aid workshop and they could probably answer that for you. I'm sorry, but I'm not familiar with the answer to that question.
Okay, so it's something we could get that answered at the financial aid workshop or email and get an answer?
Definitely an email could answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Because we could poll each other and find out who is actually offering that. But at this point in time, the majority of the campuses have not made those sorts of offers that I'm familiar with.
Another question? Do I see any hands?
Yes.
The question is, do students have to declare a major, or can they put undeclared, and are they looked at differently?
No, that really varies from campus to campus. But for the most part, students can and are encouraged to apply undecided if they're truly undecided. There are certain campuses that do admit by major. For example, at my former campus, Berkeley, I know in the College of Engineering and in the College of Chemistry, there was selection by major within those colleges. And then all the other colleges were generally were reviewed in the general comprehensive review process. So it really varies from campus to campus. But undecided is still the most popular, and the second most popular is undeclared.
So we do have time for one more question. Yes, in the back. The question was, we do not require the subject test, but some of the more competitive campuses would like to see them, and is that true?
I'm on a roll. So the SAT subject test is no longer a requirement. You're probably referencing math and science-based degree programs where I see you not shaking your head. But it is not a requirement. If it, yes, in the comprehensive review and holistic review process, we will look at any and all information that gives evidence of high levels of achievement in any academic area. And if a student puts forth an ELC, our commitment is to look at everything that the student put forward. If a student does not submit an SAT, SAT. If a student does not submit an SAT subject test, it is neutral. It is not negative. It will not work in the disfavor of the student. But let me make a comment quickly about math and science-based programs. What programs are looking for is strong evidence of high levels of academic achievement in those subject areas, and there's other ways to recognize that outside of the subject exam.
Okay, one last question.
It's a quick one.
Okay.
If the California residents were not displaced by the enrollment numbers from out of state and international, can we assume then that the freshman admission pool or freshman class numbers went up? That, in other words, there are more on campus?
Our numbers this past year were virtually the same from the year previous. We've only increased because we do have capacity on some of our campuses. So campuses that chose to increase the non-resident pool did so above the numbers that they previously had admitted.
I'd like to thank you for attending this session, and please keep in mind you will have representatives from each of the campus here where you can ask individual campus questions, and they will be out at staffing their tables. Thank you.
How you doing?
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.